Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
Good Saturday afternoon, or should I say, good sequester afternoon, and welcome to The Drift. Apparently, we are all still alive today. Haven't heard about any planes dropping from the sky. Power still seems to be on. Water's flowing from the tap. So apparently, miraculously, we are somehow all surviving a 2% cut in our government spending. If this does not sound like the golden voice of Gary Wellings, there's a good reason for that. Gary is on a much-deserved vacation this weekend with his brilliant and gorgeous wife, Julia, somewhere in these wonderful United States. No doubt Gary is out there attempting to enlighten someone who lacks common sense. And I suspect we may be hearing from Heavy G sometime in this hour. So, we have two of us here in the studio today. Those of you who have listened to The Drift on Sunday mornings may recognize us as occasional guests on The Drift. I am Joe Vollmer, the president of Powertrain Solutions. And with me, co-guest hosting today, is Pat Savolacci. Pat is a supply chain executive in the aerospace industry, and more importantly, one of the most common sense people that I know. So, Pat, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me here. It's a great pleasure to sit in these four walls where Gary Wellings typically resides. Again, I'm feeling very sequestered as well. I'm glad we've survived our frightener-in-chief and his elusive rhetoric.
You know, it sure did change over the week, didn't it? it was the apocalypse is upon us, and he's trotting out Ray LaHood, and he's you know and Ray's done a lot of great work in the past, and I really felt bad that the former Secretary of Transportation threw himself out there like that,
with
this apocalyptic message, right? And then, but once it's inevitable, once we're hours away from this being enacted, all of a sudden, the rhetoric changes, it's not going to be that bad.
Right. Well, I mean, he kept yesterday, his press conference was all about if the Republicans do something, we won't have a tragedy.
Yeah.
I've done all I could. I don't need to do any more. I'm the most powerful man in the United States, but John Boehner and McConnell are the ones that are affecting us right now. And earlier in the week, he was talking about, hey, we're not going to make this Democrat-Republican. We're going to solve this.
Yeah.
And then he came and instead of falling on the sword, he stuck it in the backs of Republicans and in the American people, ultimately.
Absolutely. I think they've done a pretty good job of spinning whose idea this all was in the first place.
Absolutely. And we all know those who are reading factual commentary know exactly who started it and who is now, instead of going into how we're going to deal with this money, what money are we going to take from where? Let's continue to tell us that the janitor's not going to get paid, the teachers aren't going to get paid, that you're going to stand in four-hour lines in the airport. When he can decide exactly how those cuts are made by getting the people together and making the right decisions, and that just isn't what is coming out of his mouth as we're sitting here today.
And there certainly was the opportunity for that joint committee to resolve this and prevent this from happening.
Oh, absolutely.
And it did not happen. And, once again, it's the ineffectiveness of our Congress. You look at them, they're getting on their planes, they're going home, the lights are off in the Capitol as this comes forward. And the people we deserve better from our elected representatives.
Oh, absolutely. And, the only good thing, that came out of this is the Republicans actually sat at the poker table for a change with President Obama. Obama had ace high, and they had four kings. Obama tried to push all in, and they called him.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened. So now let's let it play out. And the Republicans, I think, finally found some intestinal fortitude to do what was necessary to bring the whole discussion of spending to a head.
Yeah, and we're talking about a measly 2%, 2.3%, whatever the numbers are. I mean, we're talking about numbers that in the private sector, Pat, you and I over the last decades working in the private sector have experienced budget cuts to our departments and to our companies within our companies far greater than 2%.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in what it's when those things occur, leaders lead and make sure that the people that do the job are sacrificed last.
Yep.
They take care of the 79 vice presidents and all the rest of those things first. And then, you know, if it has to go down, it goes down. Obama starts with the janitor at the White House. Yeah. He starts with the teacher on the military base. And just prods and parades all these people in. It's like People magazine. I'm expecting to see his magazine cover when I go through the line at Kroger with his rhetoric. It's simply a media show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, the sensationalism, it's getting tiring. Quickly want to get to who our sponsor is this first half hour, and then we want to get to a guest who's waiting on the line.
More guests?
You're a co-host. You're not a guest.
Oh.
Okay. So if you want to stay abreast of the best conservative articles on a daily basis, and if you want to know what topics are on Gary Welling's mind in advance of this Saturday radio show, you're going to check out thedailydrift.com, you know, for an excellent collection of links to the very best news articles of the day as personally handpicked by Gary Welling. So he doesn't have some staff kind of doing what he thinks. Okay, he's personally putting these up on the website, and I know he put some fresh ones up here this morning. And then also, to advertise on this radio show, you can email Gary at gary@thedailydrift.com. And also, of course, the listening audience today, feel free to call in on 734-822-1600. We would love to hear from you. Now, Derek, can you help me out in the booth and play a clip from Maxine Waters concerning the sequestration?
That's going to be a great setback. We don't need to be having something like sequestration that's going to cause these job losses, over 170 million jobs that could be lost.
Now, for you who didn't catch that, that was the Democratic congresswoman from California, from the Los Angeles area, I think basically the Torrance through Inglewood area, proclaiming that we're looking at losing 170 million jobs in the United States. Now, given that we have 150 million working Americans, apparently everyone and then 20 million people we don't know about are going to lose their jobs.
Yes, everyone, including anyone crossing the border today that is supposed to be working, will be told to go back into their home country. Just another example of the scare tactics with complete and utter lack of information again.
You know, I suspect we're going to be hearing that she misspoke. Okay. But you know, I have a problem with that. If you're in a position like that and you can't inherently realize you just said 170 million people are going to lose their jobs, and you don't realize that, you know, you don't have the self-realization that you've made that kind of error, okay, I have a problem with you being elected in the first place.
Right. The minute it comes out of your mouth, I expect that she'll be up for a high-profile cabinet post in the next day or so, Joe.
I agree. So, hey, let's get on. We got Jeff Brenneman waiting on the line. He's been very patient waiting for us here. First, a little introduction. Jeff Brenneman serves as the Senior Vice President at M Capital Management, bringing significant experience as a public policy consultant in Washington, D.C. and Michigan. So this is a guy. He's not. He's looking out for us here in this state. Okay. He's worked extensively on alternative energy technology, higher education funding, and a wide array of local government and economic development projects. And let me personally add this about Jeff. I've known him a long time. If you're a small or large business, you're an academic institution or a municipality, and you need help maneuvering your way through Lansing or Washington, which are complete messes, okay? You just don't show up there. You don't fly there and say, I know what to do. Okay, you're going to need some guidance. Jeff's your guy. So if you need to get a hold of him, just email Gary at thedailydrift.com, and he can set you up. But anyhow, Jeff, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good, Jeff. How are you, bud?
Great. Hi, Pat. I'm actually formerly employed by M Capital because I guess I just lost my job, according to Maxine Waters. So I've actually been sitting here looking at the want ads. So if anyone has any jobs, and it sounds like there'll be a lot of them out there because everyone's lost their job, call me. I'm for hire.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's apparently 170,000 people in line now, and then 20 more thousand ghosts in line with them. So.
Yes, exactly. 170 million, Joe.
That's million,
yes.
Buddy.
Yeah, I guess I need to fact check my own numbers here.
Exactly.
But anyhow, Jeff, really appreciate you joining us today. We want to, pick your brain for some insight on what's going on in Washington and in Lansing. And let's start off with, the topic of the day being the sequester. What thoughts do you have about what's going on in Washington and the sequester?
Well, first I have a number for you, and you can tell me what the significance of this number is. It's 175. So we were just talking 170 million. I'm talking 175. Any idea what that number is?
I do not.
That's how close we are to an all-time high at the Dow Jones Industrial Average as of Friday's close.
Right.
So, maybe we should be cutting 85 billion every Friday, and we'd continue to see our portfolios rise because clearly, Wall Street did not get spooked by the sequestration, and in fact, we're likely to see an all-time high of the stock market come early next week. So, interesting. When everyone is losing their jobs.
Yeah, the Wall Street numbers certainly fly in the face of that. And if it continues to rise, it really just shows how much Wall Street respects, not only, if you look at Wall Street, when a company gets lean and mean, Wall Street respects that.
Okay? Right.
And now our government is going to be forced finally to become a little more lean and mean. Not that 2% does much, right? But
start.
Hopefully we'll have some of the same lean and mean attitude out of our government in the future.
Yeah, Jeff, was this the absolute right play at the right time for the Republicans?
Well, I've actually kind of seen this coming since the end of the year tax deal. I thought one member of Congress back then said it pretty well when he Obama was getting his tax increases on the wealthy on rates. The Republicans finally gave in and came up with a number of somewhere around 400,000, I believe it was. If you're making more than that, your rates were going up. But as one member of Congress said, okay, you got your dessert first. Get ready for 100 days of spinach. it's time to cut spending. And the Republicans, so fine, they gave them the tax rates. Tax debate is over, period. Let's talk about spending, and it's been interesting to watch that the whole debate once again becomes let's find new revenues, and that was decided. Revenues have been decided. It's now time to cut spending.
Right. So now that the world didn't fall off the rails, and there may be a little less sympathy towards the positions that he's been taking for the last several weeks relative to all the middle-class Americans that are going to be affected by this. Is he now going to have to come back and show some leadership here and say, hey, look, we have the authority and the intelligence to make the right cuts, and oh, by the way, there's plenty of fat on the cow.
Right. Yeah, no question. Unless there is a real change in public outcry, and clearly, March 1st came in with a yawn, unless there is a real outcry from the public, I don't see why the Republicans would turn around and say, well, why should we give in on raising more revenues? That's really not what this debate should be about.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it was never, this was something that he prepared in 2011 when he went down the path that he went down there with the bipartisan committee that he put together. They came up with nothing. The result was this initiative, an initiative that, he brought to the forefront. And like we talked about earlier, the poker game is played, and here it is. And I think it's about time that we've had to stop the can and deal with it instead of taking another swing at it down the road.
Right. Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And these cuts, the way they're designed, are clearly not the smartest way to do it.
Sure.
The Congress and the President need to get together and find another way to cut the appropriate amount of spending. There's other ways to do it. Be big boys and big girls and get together at the table and figure out a way to do it. And that's unfortunately where this president, I think, as history will judge him, he's taken the wrong lesson from Ronald Reagan. He's tried to use the bully pulpit in the way that Ronald Reagan did, but Ronald Reagan was very selective in how he went to that microphone and how he used it to rally. And this president tends to, use that too much and try to campaign full-time versus pulling people together in a room. And, Ronald Reagan did a hell of a lot of that back in the days with Tip O'Neill and Majority Leader Mitchell and others to come up with compromises and find solutions. Not just go out there and rally against your opponents, but never even and call them on the phone and talk about how to solve the problem.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, he's not running again, is he?
No.
hello. So, the much ballyhooed, one of the last things, and Joe, we can move off this one because we could go all day on this one, but the much ballyhooed Defense Department cuts. When you look at the Defense Department and the 118 senior defense officials that are in that particular department, are you telling me that if you combine the resources and perhaps lay off some fat at the top, that the national security is going to be affected by going from 118 senior officials to half that and perhaps cutting the staff on the top? I'm not sure that that's going to cause our enemies or potential enemies to come say, well, they're weak, go after them now.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't want to see cuts affect military pay. I don't want to see cuts affect the maintenance of our equipment to make sure that our men have, are well protected and have the very best tools available to them. Yeah, certainly. I think, they need to look at where there's some fat that can be cut, just as you said, Pat.
Yeah, and there, you've read an incredible amount of examples. You've got 454 White House aides making $37 million annually. I mean, that's not a huge number, but $37 million compared to the 85 isn't big, but that's a pretty decent chunk at the end of the day. And these are folks that, again, we don't want anyone to lose their job. That's not what this is all about. But we've got to make some tough decisions. And sometimes the tough decisions don't need to be made on the back of the janitor and the teacher. They can be made on the back of the VP of this or that or the director of this and that. And perhaps combining some of these cabinets and some of these departments and do the right thing. For the country, instead of scaring us into thinking that we become this suddenly poor and weak power because $85 billion has been taken off the top.
Well, there's another point that I think is very, very important for all of us to think about here. We got to step back and look at the forest through the trees here. Mr. Obama has been saying, you know, let's find a balanced approach, and the balanced approach means more revenues, and his specifics on revenues are closing loopholes, correct? I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Right.
And you know, you've heard the Republicans say, yeah, we can close some corporate tax loopholes, some, you know, limit some deductions, all those things. So why can't they come together on this? You know, you would think that, you know, you've had both sides actually talking about doing the same thing. But here's a very important point. What Mr. Obama wants to do is use those tax loopholes and changing and limiting of deductions and other things to stop us from having more spending cuts versus keeping those loopholes and deductions that we want to change for the larger issue of tax reform, corporate tax reform and individual tax reform. Because what happens if you keep, for now, those tax deductions that everyone might agree that we can eliminate, but instead use it in the context of tax reform and use it to lower rates, then all of a sudden you're talking about growth in the economy. Imagine if we can say we're going to limit deductions, we're going to close some tax loopholes, but we're also going to lower the rates for everybody as a way to increase growth in the economy. Why do we have deficits? In large part, it's also because we have such anemic growth. We're still at less than 2% annual growth in this country. Imagine if we could be at 4 or 5% growth. Guess what? Revenues for this country would come in at a staggering higher rate. So let's figure out how we use those deductions to really reform our tax code, lower the rates from 35 to 28 or 25. Let's get them down, and so it makes more sense to do, you know, business in this country, employ people, create jobs, which means more revenue for the government. I mean, let's get serious here.
Yeah, I agree. You know, if you look back in the 90s when I was doing sales within the automotive industry, and I mean, it was the growth was just incredible that was going on at that time, and the revenues came with that, you
right,
know, and
exactly.
Those are the times that we just need to have in front of us.
But that's so important, Joe, because, you know, this is what probably bothers me the most about this, and you're not really hearing this argument, is that Mr. Obama, for you know, short-time political expediency, wants to use those low-hanging fruit of, you know, getting rid of these deductions for this debate. And that would be a shame. It would be an absolute shame when we're very close to actually having tax reform. You've got the Senate chair, Max Baucus, a Democrat from Montana, a very reasonable guy who's been working with our great member of Congress from Michigan, Dave Camp, the chairman of Ways and Means in the House. Those two have been working for 2 years behind the scenes together on how tax reform could get done. And we're really close. I mean, again, if we had presidential leadership, we could actually see, and that could be Obama's legacy, is we actually saw true tax reform, similar to what happened in the 1980s for both corporate and individuals, and that would be an unbelievable legacy and probably lead to economic growth. But instead, he wants to use those simple political expediency, you know, cuts on loopholes and deductions for this debate. It is so short-sighted and so silly.
Yeah, I was excited for the first half of this year to be about tax reform. And as you know, Jeff, my daughter's off in Washington right now working for a congressman who's in Ways and Means. And,
right.
You know, we were excited for her to get that assignment because we thought it was going to be about tax reform. And it just hasn't turned out that way.
Right. Exactly.
So, Jeff, aside from the, you know, sequester and tax reform, let's get some other insight from you about what's going on in Washington and Lansing. Maybe we could touch upon the, it's not too soon to start talking about the fact that there's another election next year. I hesitate to talk about an election this next year, but, you know, let's take a look ahead at 2014 and the congressional seats. Sounds like the music's coming on. Jeff, you going to be able to hang with us for another segment?
Sure.
People are always always on the move, driving to work, getting the groceries, hauling the kids to soccer. How do they keep up to date? They listen to Wham Talk 1600, just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham for intelligent conversation with hosts like Bill Bennett, Glenn Beck, and Theron X. They stay tuned in for Fox updates, and they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 and advertise your business on Wham Talk 1600.
Fox News Radio, I'm Pat O'Neill. With no deal to stop the sequester, big spending cuts are now starting. In his weekly address, the president blaming Republicans.
None of this is necessary. It's happening because Republicans in Congress chose this outcome over closing a single wasteful tax loophole that helps reduce the deficit.
In the GOP response, Washington Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers with a different view.
The president failed to act, and his Senate never passed a bill to replace the sequester.
A huge explosion at a heating oil company in Jensen, Utah. No one was hurt, but it flattened one building and damaged several others.
Houses that were 10 miles away, 12 miles away, literally shuttered because of the size of the blast.
Emergency manager Tal Ellers. Officials near Tampa say a large sinkhole is now threatening another home. It swallowed part of a house on Thursday. The owner hasn't been found. Fox News, we report. You decide.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Student pianists from St. Olaf College will visit Southeast Michigan as part of their five-state tour to perform an array of solo piano music of the Americas, including works by Barber, Gershwin, Payne, and many more. Free admission with optional donations accepted at the door. It'll be Wednesday, March 27th at 8 p.m. at the Carytown Concert House, 415 North 4th Avenue in Ann Arbor. To learn more, call 734-769-2999 or visit CarytownConcertHouse.com. In an effort to help the bereaved cope with loss and remember those who have passed, Hospice of Michigan is providing patient families with memory bears made from the clothing of their loved one. The bears, which are 8 inches tall and made in patch quilt style, are created by Hospice of Michigan volunteers using cotton, wool, fleece, or flannel clothing that help the bereaved recall happy memories with their loved ones. Memory bears are available free of charge to all families of Hospice of Michigan patients. There is a limit of one bear per family, and bears will be made in the order of requests received. Those interested in volunteering their time and talent to creating memory bears or another of HOM's many volunteer programs should call 313-578-6259. You can learn more about Hospice of Michigan by visiting hom.org. Habitat for Humanity of Huron Valley's Bid to Build annual gala and auction will be May 18th. The pre-glow begins at 5 p.m. and the auction will be from 6 to 8:30 p.m. It'll be at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business, free parking at the Hill Structure. Tickets are $50 each. There will be live music, good food, all for a great cause. To learn more, visit h4h.org. That's h4h.org.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com.
Join us every Sunday morning for Wham! Weekend Worship. At 9 a.m., it's the Lutheran Hour Radio Show, followed at 9:30 by the Christian Science Sentinel Program. At 10, we join Bethlehem United Church of Christ. And finally, from 11 a.m. till noon, it's the First Presbyterian Church of Ann Arbor. Every Sunday morning, Wham! Offers an opportunity for you to worship wherever you are. And please visit whamradio.com and click on any of the church programs to visit their websites and to find out more about their live services.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
Welcome back to The Drift. This is Joe Vollmer in the studio with Pat Tavolacci. We're guest co-hosting as Gary Wellings is vacationing out of state with his lovely and beautiful wife, Julia.
So, it takes two to replace one Gary Wellings. Isn't that clear?
I think we're not even coming close.
Correct.
But we're doing our
best.
We're
trying.
Yeah, no, he's a pro. Not only is he excellent at what he does here, excellent human being.
That is correct.
Anyhow, Our sponsor for this half of the show is The Current Newspapers, delivered to 30,000 homes and businesses and dropped off at another 5,000. You know, Pat, the circulation for The Current has grown from 5,000 to 35,000 in just the past 5 years.
Right. If you can name another paper that's done that, I'd be amazed. And by the way, that's COURANT.
Online.com. You know, we got not just newspaper, but I mean any business to grow sevenfold. Absolutely. During the wonderful Obama years.
Right.
You know, I don't think that we can point to too many cases of that.
Right. This is not the liberal rags that are penetrating our airwaves and mailboxes across the nation, talking to us about how we're dividing the rich and the poor in this country.
Yes, yes. But the current serves Oakland, Livingston, and Washtenaw counties. You can grow your business along with The Current. This is the way to get your print advertising maximized in a local monthly newspaper. To do so, call Sam Iaquinto, also a friend of ours, 734-323-0777. Talk to Sam. Get your name out there. Brand your business. And then also, if you want to advertise on this show, you can always email Gary at gary@thedailydrift.com. And, of course, the listening audience, want to remind you today, feel free to call in. The dial-in number here is 734-822-1600. We want to hear from you. So we've been very fortunate that Jeff Brenneman has stayed on the line, and we can continue our conversation with Jeff. As a reminder, he's the Senior Vice President at M Capital Management, serving really Washington, D.C., and most importantly, us here in Michigan. So, Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for sticking around, and want to continue the excellent conversation with you. And what we were heading towards is congressional seats. You have some thoughts about what we might be expecting next year?
Well, I think the reason you've seen Mr. Obama really kind of still in campaign mode is, he's already flipped the switch to say, the only way I'm going to really get anything done in my agenda in a second term is if I can flip the House of Representatives from the Republicans to the Democrats in the 2014. And, so he's really starting this campaign of, stop the Republican obstructionism, I can't get anything done. And we're going to hear this for the next, 20 months, essentially, is that's going to be the real focus is, can they win back? Can he make it a national election? Typically, the House seats are very localized elections. And it's very hard to make House seats a national election. People hate Congress, but they love their congressman. And that really doesn't change too often. And so, can they win the 15 seats or so that are needed in the House? I think it's going to be pretty difficult. There really aren't that many vulnerable Republican seats. Sadly, redistricting in this country has continued to make less and less seats in the Congress competitive. So you have, far left and far right members in the House and the Senate, and that's part of the reason why it's harder to forge any sort of compromise in the Congress. But I really think that I think it's highly unlikely you're going to see the Republicans will lose any significant seats in the House. I think what you really want to watch is the Senate. Amazingly, even though unexpectedly, the Senate Democrats picked up seats last fall because the Republicans stumbled in many key states. We're now at 55-45 in the Senate. There are three or four very winnable seats for the Republicans, and probably another three or four that are highly competitive. So there's a likelihood that you could actually see a switch from Democrat to Republican majority in the Senate if things go their way. And it's obviously too early to predict how that's going to happen. But typically, you know, in an off election, lower turnouts and the party in power, meaning Mr. Obama's party, loses seats in the midterm election. So if history is any guide, the Republicans should have a fairly good year next year.
Well, it would be great to see some common sense Republicans pick up some seats in both the House and in the Senate. There's no doubt. And
yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing that keep in mind, because a lot of these senators were elected 6 years ago. So they were elected in a presidential year the last time they were up. Now they're in an off year. So you have people that were swept in with Mr. Obama in 2008. And, you know, it was a very clear, you know, Democratic wave in 2008. And so you have senators from Alaska, one of the reddest states in the country. You have a Democratic senator from Alaska facing reelection. You have a Democratic senator. We have an open seat in Iowa because of Tom Harkin retiring. Mm-hmm. You've got a Democratic senator in North Carolina who was, again, swept in 2008. South Dakota, West Virginia, another open seat with Jay Rockefeller's retirement. I mean, these are red states that are now either open or you're going to have very vulnerable Democrats.
Yeah, I wish I could name them off like you can. That's for sure. Now, a question I have for you, Jeff, you really taught me a lot about how Washington operates, and I guess that was over 10 years now ago, believe it or not. But, you know, what would you say about what can we expect from the leadership in the Senate and the House in the future? I mean, I've never quite 100% understood how those people come to be in power, especially some of these who seem to be so ineffective. What do you see for the future leadership of the two parties?
You know, that's a good question. I think, at the end of the day, it's how do these leaders work with the members of their caucus? And, you know, do they help them get reelected? Do they raise money for them? And do they have success in the election? There was a lot of talk about whether Harry Reid would continue as majority leader, but how can you argue with the fact that they picked up seats when they were expected to lose seats in 2012? So you can argue very effectively about how he's performed as a majority leader, but, you know, as the Democrats looking to reelect him in their caucus, and that's what it is, it's a caucus vote, they're gonna reelect him after actually picking up seats. Speaker Boehner, they lost a few seats, but he kept control. And, I'm actually a huge fan of Speaker Boehner. I think he does a great job of making sure that the conservative message is heard. But yet, you know, here's a guy who would be willing to cut deals,
right.
You know, not necessarily compromising on principle, but he's not someone who would, you know, be opposed to sitting down with this president and trying to find common ground. I've known Speaker Boehner quite well, and if there's a deal to be had, he would make it. And it's just unfortunate that you don't have all the partners that could really do that.
Yeah, he's been quite. You know, I talked about recently. As kind of losing his political horsepower. And I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, this is a guy that I think is extremely surprised by how this president is dealing with what's in front of him, and certainly how he's dealing with compromise and negotiations. I don't think Boehner felt like this president was going to do the things that these are unprecedented moves that this president is making.
Exactly. I mean, if he thinks that, you know, I would have thought that the president would have learned by now that you're not going to press, you're not going to force through public opinion John Boehner to cave on certain things. He'll negotiate, but you're not going to beat the hell out of him in public and beat the hell out of the Republicans in the House, and that's not going to bring him to the table. It doesn't work. That's not the way John Boehner operates. Would he sit down with you in a room, have a beer and have a cigarette and come up with a plan on how they could, you know, cut a deal and move on to the next issue? Absolutely. But that's not the way this president wants to work with Speaker Boehner.
No, and I've seen that, I think, in some of the White House press corps briefings where, you know, I think that they've been asking the the gentleman who speaks for the White House spokesman. I think they've been asking him, hey, what meetings are on the schedule? You know, because I think they're being called on out on it now that this guy is, as you said, you know, he's got a public campaign going rather than private meetings.
Right.
Yeah, and Carney seems a little uneasy up there on the pulpit. I mean, he basically has to say what's written, right? But, I mean, he seems to even be a little bit awed by the whole rhetoric that he's throwing out there, even as his commander is pulling his strings.
Right.
Yeah, he's looking like a deer in the headlamps right now. Yeah. There's no doubt.
Right.
So, Jeff,
of course, here in Michigan, I don't think we want to miss the fact that we're going to have a very important election here with our governor. And you know, we've in my mind been very fortunate to have a governor who has gotten things done. You know, there were a lot of similarities between Governor Granholm and President Obama in their style and frankly inability to pull people together and lead and get problems solved. And you know, we've seen this governor reform the tax code among many other issues where it's what's the problem, let's solve it, let's get it done, let's move on to the next issue. And you know, I hope that the voters will see that.
Well, and he's put the fiscal house in order, right? I mean, you can disagree with
We have a rainy day fund again in the state of Michigan. Who would have thought?
Exactly. I mean, you can see, there are some issues that you can point to and say, you know, I'm not sure why he went that way. You know, I think an example would be Detroit. I mean, I don't know why we are continuing to debate. I mean, obviously, it's coming to a head now. Bing and the council has 9 more days to figure out what they're going to do. But that has just taken so long. I mean, talk about giving someone rope to determine their own fate, and they sat there immobile for a year and a half.
Right,
which is just it's on the Belle Isle thing. I mean, there were so many ways that he was reaching out to that administration, and I think to me, it's a slam dunk. The only thing that affects him, you know, is if this right to work is becoming so polarizing that it turns him the other way.
But you know what? If the economy is continuing to improve in Michigan when next November rolls around, I guarantee you he'll be reelected. So. You know, right to work is one thing. We can have strong opinions on it one way or another. But I don't think he will be judged by that. I think he will be judged by whether or not he turned around the economy in Michigan, he turned around the budget. You know, and if we're actually, you know, for the first time in 10 years, starting to put money back into education, you know, starting to invest in different things in Michigan, because we actually balance the budget, have money, and we can start to do that. And the unemployment is going down. What better outcomes could we ask for a governor who was elected saying, "Grade me on my outcomes"?
Right, and he, you know, it's going to be interesting the differentiator between him and somebody like President Obama when he goes for his reelection. He's got some things that he did. He's got a whole set of baggage that he can bring with him of successes, and you know, I agree with you. I think he's been as advertised. He's the nerd. He's the businessman, and he's turned this state into a much more prosperous place to be. More businesses are spending money here. You know, the auto industry continues to build on plants and do the things that are necessary for their businesses, and they're staying right here because it makes sense.
And let's hope that he can turn around Detroit. I mean, the you know, we need Detroit to be a prosperous city, and this whole state needs it.
Well, the Mike Duggan play.
Let's hope that he can do it. You know, again, where was our previous governor, who was from the same party as all the administration at Detroit? For 8 years, nothing was solved, and it's just continued to get worse. So kudos to a governor who will probably get less than 10% of the vote in the city, no matter what he does to help them, for even giving a rat's ass about helping them. And he's you know, truly trying to turn that city around.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, the perfect storm in favor of Detroit is coming with the emergency manager, Mike Duggan. To me, that equals hope for the city of Detroit.
Right.
You know what I like about, you know, Governor Schneider is, you know, we have a guy who's been elected who's intelligent. We have a high IQ guy, you know, as opposed to the Maxine Waters of the world, which I'm just not guessing she's as smart as Rick Snyder, okay? And, you know, I mean, if we could just put more smart people in office who are making, you know, when Governor Snyder starts his State of the State address that I watched on television, and he starts it off with his dashboard, I think he called it. So in other words, the guy has metrics.
That's right.
Of where we're at, where we need to go, and how fast are we getting there. Okay, he's not running an emotional campaign. He's not trying to reach for people's heartstrings. He's trying to make this place an economically sound state, and he's using methods to get there.
And he spoke for an hour without a teleprompter.
Right.
Exactly. You know. So, yeah, I guess when you have 3 degrees from the University of Michigan by the time you're 21 or whatever the heck he achieved, apparently you have a sufficient mental capacity.
Yeah, I mean, business people make data-driven decisions, and that's what he's doing. Conversely, when you talk about what's going on in the White House, it's all about the emotion, as you said, Joe. It has nothing to do with data.
Yeah, yeah. It's how many people can you get cheering?
Right.
You know, and that's not working.
It's not.
Well, Jeff, hey, you've been very generous with your time today. We have a few more things we want to try and get through.
Great.
And,
thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you so much.
You bet. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, bye.
So another topic that we wanted to get into, something right off the presses of the Daily Drift, is you've heard Gary talk on this show about the union scrambling for multi-year contracts to get through this right to work. So a lawsuit was filed to protect teacher rights. The Mackinac Center Legal Foundation files on behalf of 3 Taylor, Michigan school district teachers who disagree with the 10-year clause forcing dues. And basically what the union did is said, we're gonna continue to represent you for 10 more years. And these teachers says, well, I'm not good with that. So, Derek, if we can hit track one and go from there.
I believe it's unfair of the union to have a security clause that requires me to be a member for 10 years.
So this is a union employee being forced to do what the union wants them to do because the union representation is the only one that's going to lose here. When you look at Taylor and the salaries of that particular school district employees, salaries have gone down. And why have they gone down? They've gone down because the tax base has reduced in Taylor. The union isn't going to fix that. That's what happens when it goes down, when the tax base goes down, people earn less money. So they're not being represented, and all that's coming out of their pocket is union dues, and they're getting less pay as a result. So Derek, let's continue with track two.
I just kept coming back to what has my union done for me?
Yeah, and so here's another of the 3 women that are with the Mackinac Center filing this lawsuit that's saying, I can't figure out what they're doing with the money. So, Derek, let's hit track 3, and then we'll wrap this one up and get to Gary on line 1.
Members pay the union up to $780 a year in dues, and many say they are not finding much in return.
There are several individuals that I've worked with that have had to go hire private counsel because the union didn't back them up when they had a problem with the Board of Education.
Yeah, so union, I'm paying you to protect me, and I have to go outside and hire counsel out of my own pocket to deal with the issues. So again, don't be fooled by the rhetoric of the unions. All they're trying to do is continue to pad the pocket of their business unit managers and the leaders within the union. We got Gary on line 1?
Yeah, yes, yes. We got Gary on line 1. Heavy G.
Hey, what's going on? Live from Flagler Beach. Nice job, you guys. Jeff, thank you so much for calling in. That's awesome. You guys are reading my mind. Everything I wanted to cover, you covered.
Well, we try, Gary.
Yeah, we just read the Daily Drift, Gary, and we're immediately informed on what's going on in the world.
Well, there you go. I just wanted to call and say thank you, and I'm so proud of you guys because you sound like professionals. So nice job. I'm gonna get off the line and let you continue. So you can wrap up the show.
No, Gary, don't do that. We're
really pixie dust. The pixie dust is wearing thin.
I've got a margarita getting warm while we speak. So really, I'll let you guys. You're doing a fantastic job. So
thanks, Gary.
Joe and Pat and Jeff, finish it out. I'll see you guys when I get home.
No, Gary, not so quick. You still with us?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Yeah, you know, we want to get your take on. You know, I want to hear from you. You know, you're our mentor here.
The biggest thing that bothered me this week was the total propaganda mode that the Obama administration went into on this sequester. I mean, we all know that, you know, 2% cut, whatever that comes to, and it's actually only $44 billion, I think, Jeff, that takes effect this year. It's a drop in the bucket when you're talking about a $3.5 trillion budget. And 1.5 of that or so, or one is what we're spending that we don't have. It's a minuscule amount, and I hope that the people of the United States will feel nothing. The average taxpayer will feel nothing. And the only way they would is if Obama makes the nasty cuts and he directs the Department of Homeland Security to let prisoners loose. If he directs the TSA to cut hours for people. It's going to be on Obama. It will be his fault if people feel this. It won't be the Republicans' fault.
Yeah, and that's really what it needs to how it needs to play out. Because again, as we've talked about before on the show today, he has the opportunity to work with members of Congress to determine where those cuts come, and it does not have to be where he was ballyhooing for the last several weeks on the cuts that are taking place. Those people can be continue to work, can continue to have paydays, and we can look at the exorbitant amount of fat that we only need to cut 2% of. It's a minuscule amount of money that they need to deal with in short order.
And it's still more money than they had last year.
That's right.
So where were the layoffs last year at TSA? Where were the layoffs at Department of Homeland Security? It's not there. So they still have more money now than they did last year, and yet they're crying about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Only in Washington would it work that is considered a cut if you're just going to get, if your increase is not going to be as big as you thought.
Exactly. Well, thank you, guys. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Yep. Well, that's a wrap on the show today, Pat.
Our pleasure. It was great being here with you, Joe. Thank you, Jeff Brenneman, for calling in. Always a pleasure. And, I felt like we hit what we wanted to hit today, and it went by quick, didn't it?
That's right. No time for sports, apparently.
Next week.
Next week. All right. Thank you.